All right, friends, Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason, and really, really glad to be chatting with you today. And I'm calling or talking from wonderful Southern California, and it's sunny here, and it's cheery, and I am trying to be as cheery as possible under the circumstances. I know it's a lot of challenge for a lot of folk, but us too. That's all right. I'm going to be talking probably next hour, the next show, about some practical ways of dealing with maybe your cabin fever that you're experiencing. But right now, I want to talk about another enterprise that's been thriving for a number of years. And actually, I've had a small opportunity here and there to aid and abet that thriving, and very happy to do that. A number of years ago, I wrote a piece in Solid Ground called The Third Column. And what I was trying to do is to look at the broad strokes of how the apologetics enterprise has grown from a very, very small foundation 50 years ago to the robust enterprise that it is right now and the great impact that it's having on the world right now. And in that particular piece that I wrote, it was about what I call the third column. And I identified what seems to me like three different stages of development here. And the first I call the first column. And these are the five men, small group of people that were American apologists who were speaking and publishing and doing some radio shows and stuff at the time, who were really the only players in play 50 years ago. Francis Schaeffer, Josh McDowell, Walter Martin, Norm Geisler, John Warwick Montgomery. And Josh and John Montgomery are still with us, still working away. But these are the five people that I think really laid a foundation. I call them the first column because they were the foundation, the sources of training and writing and insight that people like me drew from. And others that were pups during the Jesus movement, people like J.P. Moreland and Ravi Zacharias and William Lane Craig and a whole bunch of people, Oz Guinness, Nancy Piercy. I mean, these are the people that were our mentors as we started out. But the second column was produced by that first column, and the second column were people like the ones I mentioned and so many more that expanded up, grew up, and began to be faithful to make a difference for Christ. And many of them spawned their own organizations like Stand to Reason or Reasonable Faith or what JP is doing over at Talbot and lots of other enterprises too. I call that the second column. The second column, of course, is a lot bigger than the first. But the point of the piece was to focus in on what I call the third column. And the third column is massive. It's so much larger than the second, much more than the second was of the first, because these are all of these people that are benefiting from the people whose names you might recognize, whose names are on marquees or on the covers of books or who do conferences and stuff. These are the people that are out there benefiting from them and translating that into ministry, into changed lives, into defense of the gospel, in the local communities, people with their boots on the ground. And in that article, I mentioned a number of them that many of you will never hear of because they're small enterprises of faithful people. That's part of a characteristic of the third column. However, there was one group that I talked about, what is this, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago in this piece that I thought was a fabulous boots-on-the-ground enterprise and has expanded massively under its current leadership. That group, many of you know now, of course, Ratio Christi, current leadership since 2015, Corey Miller, he's got a PhD in philosophical theology from the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. He was on Crew's faculty at Purdue. He's adjunct professor of philosophy and comparative religions at Indiana University in Kokomo. But the most important thing is right now, and this really taken all this time, is president and CEO of Ratio Christi. And he's my guest for much of this hour. Corey, I'm really glad to have you on board. And I am so impressed with the kinds of things that I see Ratio Christi doing and how much it's grown over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years since I wrote this piece, largely under your leadership.
Well, it's great to be here, Greg. A very good privilege to be here with you. We used to, at Talbot, study your laborious, copious notes that you took in JP's classes just so pass the classes.
That's right. Well, that would be metaphysics. And Melinda Penner and I put those notes together for our own benefit. Very thoroughgoing outline. And then other people kept asking about it because we were translators of JP. And that's a lot what Stand to Reason does. But now I know that a lot of people know about Ratio Christi as generally a campus ministry that is focusing more on the issues of apologetics. But I have a feeling that's a bit of an oversimplification. So why don't you take a few moments and tell us a little bit about Ratio Christi, how it started, and where it's been going. Because I know you weren't the first president. There was Rick Schenker, who I knew years ago, who piloted the enterprise into more of a national prominence. But even before that, I guess a bunch of students got together and put this thing together to get it rolling. And tell us about the story.
Yeah, so it's been around for about a decade. It was started on the campus of App State, where two students just put their heads together and said, wow, no one is out there answering questions that a lot of these students are asking. We need to talk about, you know, having some kind of an apologetics campus ministry. And they went and talked with Southern Evangelical Seminary, some professors, administrators there, and they decided to put a name to it, get it organized, and it started there. It quickly started branching out into different universities in the area and then to Texas and so forth. And
tell us what Ratio Christi means.
Ratio Christi is Latin for the reason of Christ. Mm. And what it is an apologetics evangelism or evangelistic apologists gathering ministry. We are on campuses from Rutgers to UCLA and from Pakistan to a study center in London to a chapter developing right now in Israel, and we've got lots happening in South Africa and the Philippines. So it developed. We had our first president. He unfortunately had passed away. I've been here for about 5 years. At that time, we added professors to the mix because my background, initially leaving pastoral ministry, going to Purdue University, finding some hostility there, I realized that's where the gold is at. If you can get the professor, you get your classroom 2 for 30 years.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, I actually lectured at Purdue maybe 8 or 9 years ago. Were you part of that Christian enterprise? I think it was Crusade that had me come in. They sponsored it.
No. Well,
was
kind
that you?
Of. It was me and Paul Gould. We were both on staff with Campus Ministries at the time, but called the Symposium, and you were the first of what became 10 years of speakers. At Purdue University, and you packed the house, had 1,000 people there, and since that time, we've never had less than 1,000 people attending those events.
Well, so that was a very memorable event for me, for a couple of reasons. One, you had a whole section of atheists there that were all wearing their atheist T-shirts, kind of right down front. It was a packed house, which was exciting, and there was, and I remember somebody asking a question at the microphone, and then left the microphone. Like, okay, and that was nice. They asked the question, I answer it, moved to somebody else. He didn't like my answer, so he ran back to the microphone and then wanted to have a pitched battle with me, which isn't really the best environment for that kind of thing. But it stood out in my mind, and it was a great event. And did we actually meet there the first time? Do you remember that?
I think we probably did. And that event was an example of how we try to network with other campus ministries. So there were about a dozen campus ministries, a dozen churches, some businesses that had come together. And so that's, you know, the subtitle of our organization is Campus Apologetics Alliance.
Well, I'm glad you put it that way. I did notice that, and that's not always the case when I go on campus representing one group, that the other groups show up in force. And it was a great example of all the community, Christian community, working together to do something great. And it was a lightning, or help our listeners have a more nuts and bolts understanding of your operations in the local Christian communities there on campus?
So we see ourselves as distinct from the rest of the campus ministries because we do apologetics evangelism. And our distinction from the rest of the apologetics community is that we're on the campus. And so we function like a special ops ministry. We have a professor's ministry, a student ministry. We deal with high schoolers in the local churches. So we try to be community players, believing in the local church, believing that standard discipleship can be carried out by a great number of other ministries. And so we focus intently on apologetics evangelism. Now, we're not a bunch of eggheads. You know, we follow Epictetus, the Greek philosopher's dictum. We have two ears and one mouth for a reason, so that we listen more.
Well, that's good.
If someone needs a hug, we give them a hug. But if they need an argument, we're the campus ministry to do just that.
Well, that's a good distinction. But first you said we're not a bunch of eggheads, and you went immediately to a Greek philosopher's name that no one recognizes. So you're at cross purposes there a little bit. The point you're making is a good one, though. We've got to listen.
Yeah, and if I mean, the Christian church, as you know, Greg, especially in this last century, has abdicated the life of the mind largely. It's not reflective of the history of Christianity for the last 2,000 years.
Exactly.
But with respect to that trio of the head, the heart, and the hands, the American evangelical experience has in many ways excommunicated the head of Christ. Well, we believe that not just the hands and the heart, but if anywhere ought to have on exhibit the head of Christ, it's at the university. So while we don't want to get to become a bunch of eggheads and be like Spock, we're ready to do that at any time with the highest level.
Sure. Yeah, like a sharp mind, warm heart kind of approach.
Yes.
That's what J.P. Moreland used to always say. And, of course, we both studied under J.P. And benefited greatly from that. And so, you know, you mentioned special ops here. I like that way of looking at it. Ironically, I gravitate towards the military language, even though the tactics that I teach are meant to be warm and interactive and are engagements with non-Christians looking more like diplomacy than D-Day is the way I put it. But I think that the sometimes the medical terminology is really apropos because sometimes we specialize. And the fact is there are a lot of campus groups that just do not have either the vision or the capability or the manpower or the insight or whatever it is they have, just like pastors, to do everything, like, for example, apologetics. They do certain things. And I think of Stand to Reason coming alongside pastors, for example, to solve problems that they have. We'll come into your church. We're not going to compete with what you do. You do one thing, we do something else. We're going to help you out. We're going to meet some needs of your people in a way that you're not able of doing it. And it sounds to me that that's the attitude that you guys have on campus, where there might be a tendency to have a little bit more turf protection mindedness.
You can find that with the campus ministries. You can find that with the churches, that fortress mentality. We try to break that down. We believe that you can do things bigger and better together. That's part of our DNA is networking, leveraging resources, because we've got a big fish to fry. Mm-hmm. We don't have time for idiosyncratic debates anymore, because while we're not outgunned, we've got God. We're severely outnumbered at the university.
Boy, that is a great way of putting it. We are not outgunned, but we are outnumbered. I got to remember that one, because it focuses in on two realities: our foundation, what the world is really like, that we are in God's hands, and God is the ultimate victor. But when we stand on the front line, in the line of fire, man, there's a lot of guns going off in our face. More so now than ever before. And I'm curious about this. And next segment, we'll get into more details about a certain aspect of this. But in the 5 years that 2015 to present, so you're in your fifth year now as president of Ratio Christi. Of course, you've been on campus before that in your different roles. What's it look like for you in terms of a conflict curve, for lack of a better word, in the way Christians or the kind of environment that Christians are engaging right now in a university atmosphere?
Oh, it's just absolutely incredible. I mean, Greg, I left pastoral ministry because I saw what was happening at the universities. I saw many of my own students going off to the secular baptismal font or the university,
yeah,
and coming back, you know, with their heads just scrambled. And I thought, okay, like the Greeks in the city of Troy, you've got to be able to strategically get into the enemy castle and do it right by covert operations. And if mm-hmm. you know, if you see problems downstream, another metaphor, you don't want to solve them by addressing that issue. You want to go upstream, and upstream is the right university. It's the most influential institution of Western civilization right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought was, if I could go off to a secular university with a good name, cover over my evangelical past, I could get in like the Trojan horse in the city of Troy. And I got there, and 6 weeks into it, I'm getting, you know, prank calls at 3 o'clock in the morning. I had a Marxist professor put a note in my file that I'm delusional and schizophrenic. And then finally, by the fifth year, I was all but dissertation, but I had the my position just pulling out from under me. I was done. I had to terminate with a five-year master's degree, even though I had a 3.5. I had all my coursework done, funding from a different department, and so forth, but I couldn't move on. I was told I had too much of a faith perspective. And when I realized what really was happening at the highest levels with the professors, not just the students on the campuses and their common temptations, but the ideology, I thought, wow, who is going after the professor?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Bright, the founder of Campus Crusade, on his deathbed said, if I had to do it all over again, I would begin with professors. And it's at that time that I decided I would move into professor ministry. I would go on for a PhD yet a second time, mm-hmm. which I eventually completed. And 2 months later, I got this job at Ratio Christi
mm-hmm.
While I had been continually teaching at Indiana University. So I faced legal experiences there at IU. In my undergrad, I faced it, and then at Purdue, where I had no recourse legally, but I realized this is where the battlefield is really at, the ideas
sure.
at the university.
That reminds me of the documentary from a number of years ago called Expelled,
yeah.
which a lot of people were dismissive of because they thought it over-exaggerated the challenges felt by Christian academics in an academic situation, but from what I could tell, it didn't over-exaggerate it at all. I have a number of friends, and now you're another example of that, who experienced tremendous amount of resistance. And from what I understand, your resistance was about your spiritual convictions. It wasn't the academics, because you went on to the University of Aberdeen, which is no slouch academic institution, to finish your PhD work, but it was because of your own convictions that you were running into so much difficulty. Is that right?
Right. And I don't want to say that every department and every professor at every university is like this. I had William Rowe, who is one of the most famous
right.
atheists in philosophy, a former, evangelical, you might say. But he spent 35 years at Purdue and shared his testimony with me one day at lunch. He gave me a letter of recommend that I used to get into Aberdeen. I was his last student before he retired
good.
And then later died. But there were sufficiently hostile professors there who I tried to navigate around and just couldn't successfully do it. Others
well, the significant thing here is not the exception, but the rule, because the rule is what determines what's going on. And so generally speaking, even if there are more fair-minded people who differ with us philosophically or theologically, the general tide is against
Absolutely.
Christian academics. And
yes.
So anyway, so that's the background, and then that gets you now into a situation where you're piloting an enterprise that is not only having a significant impact with students and expanding so quickly, but also with professors as well. So I know that when an organization expands, they need more people. And I have actually consistently recommended, when people ask me, gee, what do I do with what I've been learning, wherever it's been? And actually, I'm looking at the clock here. We should go to break. So this is what we'll pick up on when we return here. In what ways could Ratio Christi provide an opportunity for this expanding field of or expanding group of trained apologists trained in MA programs directly or indirectly through the Second Column crowd and still some of the First Column crowd too. We'll come to that in just a moment. My guest is Corey Miller. He's the president and CEO of Ratio Christi, working on campus to represent Christ, the reason for Christ. I'm Greg Kokel, and this is Stand to Reason. You know, if you've gained anything from listening to Stand to Reason, I'd really be thrilled to hear it from you. I love to take your questions, of course, but I also want your feedback. So here's what you can do. Head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. That kind of thing really helps us to get the word out so more ambassadors for Christ can find the show and become equipped to stand confidently. And you never know, I might just give you a shout out on the air to show you my appreciation for your positive review. I value you as a faithful listener. I look forward to reading what you think about the show. Thanks.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
Greg Kokel back with you today with my guest, Corey Miller, president and CEO of Ratio Christi. This is an organization I'm sure many of you have heard about because they have grown so massively and quickly, not only around the country in universities, but internationally and even, I think, in high schools now, Corey. Tell me a little bit about your representation now, both nationally and internationally and in levels of education.
Levels of education in terms of our staff. Sorry about that.
No, I was referring to my understanding is that you're not only in universities here, but also in high schools and whatever. That's
right. Our core is to influence the students on the university campuses. Okay. But part of that is to assist our people are involved in local churches. And so we want our people to be involved in Ratio Christi College Prep. A lot of students fall away from the faith. A lot of churches aren't necessarily equipping them to face what they're about to face when they're on campus at a university. So we want to help to bridge that and through College Prep to drive them into the campus. And then we want to also reach the professors because you can't really go after the university and ignore the most influential post of the most influential institution of Western civilization. We see the professor as, you know, the 1040 window of the Western world, the greatest omission of the Great Commission. So many people are reaching various groups, but they're missing that one. And so we try to reach all three of those, but our core is focused on the university student.
Yeah. As I've, you know, been following just what's been happening in the university for a while there was this impression that kids were losing their convictions in virtue of the university environment. And it turns out we've learned that a lot of these people who go south at the university have already left Christ while they're in high school because they were not getting the kind of support that they needed then, and so they were involved in a group that was encouraging to them. But when they left the group and they didn't have those artificial supports, since their faith was not substantive and genuine, it was very easy to walk away from it in the university. And this is why I think having a presence with the high school crowd, so to speak, in apologetics is so strategically vital nowadays.
Right, right. And our vision is thoughtful Christianity, transforming lives on campus today, changing culture tomorrow. And by that campus, we're also talking about the church campus. We do this by equipping students from that level through faculty with historical, philosophical, and scientific reasons for following Jesus.
Okay, tell me one other thing now. If I were to go to a university where they had a Ratio Christi a chapter, and by the way, how many universities in the country right now have chapters approximately?
We slimmed down extensively because we wanted to make sure we were looking at our mature ministry, not just paper tigers. So we're down to about 125 campuses now with about 200 staff from UCLA to Rutgers in America. And there's about 5,000 campuses. So anyone out there with an interest, contact us.
Okay, well, then we're going to talk about that. So if I were on campus, though, and climbed on board with your organization, what are the kinds of activities that I would engage in as part of your community being involved with Ratio Christi?
Now, similar to other campus ministries, we meet weekly. But the difference is we don't do typical prayer groups and Bible studies and Thursday night barn dances. Most of us can't dance anyway. but, you know, we focus, again, like a laser beam on apologetics, evangelism, and discipleship so that we network with the other groups on the campus. And part of it will depend on the audience. If we've reconnoitered the campus appropriately, is it a science-driven campus? Is it humanities? What are the needs of the students? Will our focus be on science apologetics? Will it be on philosophical apologetics, biblical, historical? Is it, you know, interpreting the Bible, things like that? So we want to be able to read our audience appropriately. But we meet weekly. We hold big events at least annually, if not once per semester. And those include events like debates on God's existence, where we've had up to 4,000 people attend a single event with 10,000 live stream from 60 countries around the world, to human trafficking and sex slavery. Well, we'll bring in ex-porn stars and ex-sex slaves, and they'll be able to give the gospel from a standpoint of from slavery to freedom. What better context to do so? And then we'll turn around and have a debate on morality and God. So we always turn it to apologetics evangelism, even if we start with a Torah scroll that stretches out 93 feet or a big debate or ex-porn stars and sex slaves. We always manage to turn it back to this issue because we want people to be thinking about Christianity as a thoughtful expression of Christ. And that thoughtful is a double entendre where you think about the compassion of the heart and the contemplation of the mind.
Right. So it sounds like there's overlap then. You have people that might be part of other campus communities like InterVarsity or CRU or something like that who are going to go to your events maybe on different nights in order to get a different type of experience, a different type of training, a different type of feeding than they're getting from their other communities.
That's right. We have students doing that, and we even have a handful of staff that do that as well.
Interesting.
But yes, we have students that do that. Sometimes they'll get their barn dance and their fellowship elsewhere. They'll get their training from us.
Not at the Baptist church, probably, the barn dance. But anyway, when I ended the last segment, I was talking about opportunities that Ratio Christi provides for young people who are learning about apologetics and maybe even getting degrees in apologetics, certainly getting trained and becoming students of their craft is the way I like to put it, and are looking for ways to use what they're learning in a more official way, maybe even in a full-time ministry way. And what has already stood out for me about Ratio Christi being the kind of organization you are and being in expansion mode is that this is a place that I've told people to check out as a live possibility. Tell us a little bit about the opportunities that would be available to some of our listeners who are getting some training in some fashion and may want to pursue something like Ratio Christi as a full-time mission option.
Yeah, again, if you have a passion for evangelism, if you see the university as a strategic place in culture, join us, whether part-time or full-time. If you've got a spare 5 to 15 hours a week, we've got a number of volunteers. If you don't have training in apologetics, we can get it for you. We have partnerships with a number of different ministries and seminaries. We can get discounts on things. But we will provide opportunities for you if you want to become a full-time missionary, as I am. I raise my own support still as well. You can do that. We'll give you the training to do that. And, you raise your initial support, and then for the next 30 years, it's just maintenance. From that point, you can write, you can teach, you can debate, you can travel. The sky's the limit. It's a tremendously flexible opportunity. And each campus, we've got one to maybe six staff on. There are tens of thousands of students. There are 1.6 million professors. You want to go after the most strategic. You want to go after professors. Join us for that. If you want to just go after students, if you want to help us, within the local churches, contact us. Let's talk about how we can work together.
Do you have anything like an entry level set of skills that you're looking for people that will consider full-time work with you, missionary work, as you described it?
We do, and we work that out through the hiring process. We want people to identify with our doctrinal statement, have chemistry with our philosophy of ministry, and then we want to, see that the person can be engaged in conversation. Again, we get nerdy. We can nerd out like the best of them, but we really want to be able to lead campus ministries, and so we want to be able to train people and help people to form groups on campuses, backed by Alliance Defending Freedom, of course, and providing our constitution to do that, so that we can have boots on the ground. Again, a special ops ministry, it's like we go in and we sight the laser down, we bring in some of the big guns for the heavy bombardiers, but we are the special forces, the Green Berets on the ground, and we'll help people get the training they need to do that as well.
You mentioned the ADF, the Alliance for the Defense of Freedom.
Yes.
It's just a legal group that's been helping a lot of Christian groups to run into restrictions, inappropriate restrictions in campus environments, and ADF comes to the rescue. Okay, how much of that has been a problem in your campuses that you've been working on?
I mean, from me personally, I've been exonerated by an ADF attorney where I had a student in my ethics class at Indiana University call me on the carpet and say I was a homophobe. He took it all the way to the top simply because I decided to educate rather than indoctrinate. And with the atheist text being pro-gay, I decided to give an alternate perspective, and that wasn't good enough. And when I asked him about tolerance, he said, I don't believe in being tolerant to the intolerant, and smiled at me and walked off.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
two atheist students come to my defense and forced the university to listen to my lectures that they had recorded. And, ADF, with four letters across the bow, I eventually got exonerated. Mm-hmm. With the organization, one of our board members is one of the leading attorneys in ADF, and the Colorado Cake Bakers case that got exonerated was in part thanks to him.
In Colorado.
We've been in about 21 cases of legal proceedings. We've got at any one time between 3 to 6 cases going on. Just won a federal victory this last year at the University of Colorado and the year before at Kennesaw State in Georgia. So it's a constant battle just to be able to have freedoms that are given to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. If people wanted to follow up on a potential ministry opportunity at any level, whether it's part-time, volunteer, full-time, however it's construed, what are their next steps? What do you suggest they do, Corey?
Go to our website, check us out, see if it is something that you could develop a taste for, cultivate a taste, talk with some of our personnel, info@ratiochristi.org is a good place to message. And let's talk about a university near you, because there are 5,000 of them. And most of the Christian world are not reaching the most influential institutions of Western civilization. Institutions, by the way, that we started and that were heartily Christian for the first 200, 250 years.
Right, right. Ratio Christi, RACIOCHRISTI, pretty straightforward, .com or .org?
Org.
.org, and that's where you can kind of start your search and your saga if you're interested in working more with Ratio Christi. Now, you said something a moment ago. I want to change. Let me look at the time. You know, why don't we take a break here, and then when I come back, I want to change topics a little bit, because there's a very, very interesting angle here that our listeners are going to be really surprised to hear. Okay, but it's very important, Corey, and I want to it's pretty cool, actually.
Certainly, yes.
Yeah, but we'll pick up on that in a moment. Greg Kokel here with my guest, Corey Miller. He's the president and CEO of Ratio Christi. I, of course, am the president of Stand to Reason. We'll be back in just a moment.
You can connect with STR on social media to keep up to date on all the latest, including articles, videos, events, and giveaways. You'll easily find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Interact with STR staff, post comments, get involved with other like-minded Christians, weigh in by responding to some of the issues of the day, and see what's going on behind the scenes. Social media is your gateway to all the latest from STR, including speaking events, new podcasts, resources, articles, and what's on our mind today. Follow STR online and find all our social media platforms when you visit str.org and click Connect at the bottom of the page.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Greg Kokel back with you here on Stand to Reason. My guest, Corey Miller of Ratio Christi. He's the president and CEO there, last 5 years. And this is one of those enterprises that have been expanding almost too fast. I think they're kind of pulling the reins in a little bit just so they can build a stronger foundation. And this is an opportunity we mentioned that may be available to you. As someone who, as many have asked me, how do I get into this line of work or something to that effect? RatioChristi.org is the place to go to get more information about that. But, you know, Corey, I want to shift gears now and talk a little bit about the campus environment. And since you've been working there for a long time, and this is by way of informing parents and grandparents or boomers or even millennials who've been out of it for a while. I don't know where all these lines are drawn so much anymore. About what the current campus environment is actually like, and especially as a warning to Christians getting ready to enter that world. Now, a few weeks ago, or maybe a week ago, I'm trying to remember now, it was last week. Neil Shenvey was on the show, and he was giving us a very foundational understanding of a broad-based philosophic point of view that has largely consumed the campus, and it's called a critical theory. And we'll summarize this in a minute, but what that actually amounts to, go back over what he mentioned, but people have heard terms like, tolerance and social justice and post-colonialism and feminism and intersectionality and white privilege and white fragility and all kinds of terms that are even in the news now for the casual observer. They recognize these. They're not sure what's going on here. Bring us up to speed a little bit on what is going on here philosophically on the campus that students are facing.
Well, just a little backstory to that is that we lost the universities, and I've got an article on this, how we lost the universities, about a century ago.
Right.
The universities and the humanities have been dominated by, you know, postmodern relativism for the most part, and in the sciences, it's scientific naturalism. And what we typically call neo-atheists usually don the halls of scientific naturalism.
Mm-hmm.
But over this last century, something has been brewing, and you don't always see what happens. It takes a long time to turn a battleship. It takes a long time for things to trickle down from the ivory tower. Until recently, things have been moving very, very quickly. So, for example, just to give you a sense, or give parents a sense of what's happening on the universities, all the way up through, you know, the 1960s and up to the early 1990s, the ratio of left to right in professors was about 2-1. In the last 25 years, it's gone from that to what is now 12-1 for those who are 65 and older retiring, and 23-1 for those who are ages 40 and under, the new professors for the next 2 or 3 decades. In some departments, it's 70-1, like in religious studies. That's where you don't want to send Johnny. That would be the worst. But what has happened in recent times, because of some stuff that happened over the last century, and it's been germinating from the Ivy Leagues and influential texts and so forth, is this thing called critical theory or social justice. We hear terms called identity politics or political correctness. Those are like socks you throw on a wall and hope something sticks. It's like a Venn diagram. You pull them all together, and there's a common core that people can understand what this is. Well, that Frankenstein that emerged in the laboratories that scientific naturalism began and allowed to fester in the humanities has now emerged victorious and is even overwhelming the sciences now. That's the new dog in town, so to speak. The neo-atheists, they reigned for about 20 years. In some respects, in their influence. That influence has been waning because this new movement is where it's at.
Yeah, and just as a review from what I learned from Neil, and I had a fairly shallow grasp of this before, and it's not so shallow anymore, but it's still, I'm learning. The best way to understand what's going on is to understand how the critical theorists, and it turns out, not just in a certain sense the official critical theorists, because of their influence, the general population of the campus, as I understand it, sees the world principally in a binary way. And the binary here is not male and female. That's, in their view, part of the problem. Their binary is oppressor groups and subordinate oppressed groups. So you have those who are the oppressors, and that would include people think of gender in the sexual binary, and those who are the oppressed groups. So you got the oppressors and the oppressed, and this is a kind of a what's the right word here? It's a further development of Marxist ideology, but it's not along economic lines. It's on these other lines, and this is how the world is divided. And so you're either an oppressed person or you're an oppressor. And what troubled me as I view this from afar is it's really clear that a person like me is going to be viewed as a bad influence on society because my skin is white, my sex is male, my sexual orientation is heterosexual or heteronormative. In other words, I think that's appropriate. And that my worldview is Christian. Those are like four major strikes against me. So I inhabit categories, four different categories of oppressors, which makes me an oppressor no matter what my personal virtues or vices happen to be. People don't have to know anything about me personally to know that I'm bad, because I just am members of this group. And the ones that I personally am an oppressor of is all of those people in the other groups who I may not have had anything to do with, or everything that I've had to do with has been completely cordial and gracious. Still, there's this adversarial relationship. Have I described that accurately so far?
Yeah, and if you can, you know, when I think about things as a philosopher, I always think about the three major branches. If you can see a triangle, or imagine a triangle, your listeners, with down at the bottom, you've got reality. Next, you've got the theory of knowledge, and then you've got ethics. So what is real? How do we know what is real? How should we then live based on what we know about reality? Well, the view of reality from this critical theoretical standpoint that was academic, but now it's full course into the churches and the seminaries, the campus ministries. It's not just in the secular universities among non-believers, is that the world is divided up in a binary way, the haves and the have-nots, the victims and the victimizers, oppressors and oppressed, bourgeois, proletariat. There's two kinds of people in the world. That's it. In terms of the theory of knowledge, it's based on lived experience from being in the victim or oppressed or, you know, that have-not kind of a class. And then the ultimate goal of it is justice, or we call it social justice, where it's talking about some kind of equality, a coerced means to get to the equality. Oftentimes when we think about Marxism or communism, we think about economic justice or redistribution of wealth. But this is talking about economic justice, feminist justice, LGBT justice, reproductive, i.e. abortion justice, environmental justice, that Trojan horse that's called social justice that a lot of, frankly, Christian leaders adopt and sometimes they salivate over right now. It's the new buzz. That may have one good thing in it, like human trafficking. Yeah, let's help the poor in that way and downtrodden and those who are victimized in a sincere, genuine sense, in a biblical sense. But that Trojan horse has got a lot of injustice in it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing starting to take over. And it's not what people think. Greg, it borrows Christian capital, Christian vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
It's more dangerous than 1.0, which was our battlefield in the last generation with, you know, scientific naturalism, because that was sort of dry. This is about ethics, and it reaches the sentiments in people's hearts and their feelings and things like that. And so it's moving a lot quicker, and it plays on guilt. And it utilizes Christian language like, what would Jesus do? You know, hate or celebrate? What would Jesus do? Well, he would love. He wouldn't hate. He would celebrate.
Well, I think the attraction for Christians is in part the fact that they believe in justice, and justice is a noble concept. It's a connotation word. It has a feeling about it, so to speak. And so when they hear social justice, they think, well, the prophets were concerned about the poor. It's interesting, though, because when I read the Old Testament in the Proverbs and all of these things where there's reference to the poor, the problem was the mistreatment of the poor. There wasn't an understanding that there was a lack of justice simply in virtue of being poor. Being poor wasn't a lack of justice. It was when the poor were abused because they weren't people of power. And those are genuine harms. But now the term is different. And one person put it this way, I think I heard this from somebody else and I didn't think this one up on my own, but regardless of where it came from, it's good. Whenever you add an adjective to the word justice, then you corrupt it. What's wrong with just justice?
Yeah,
why do we have to call social justice and gay, sexual justice, and for goodness sake, abortion justice? I'm concerned with abortion justice, but my understanding of justice is the exact opposite of what those who are defending so-called abortion justice have in mind. Now, and so you mentioned guilt. You know, there is a lot of finger-pointing, but it's guilt by association. It isn't guilty persons. It's membership in a guilty group. And whether the groups themselves are guilty, that's a big question in my mind. But in any event, this is old-fashioned prejudice, a word from the 60s. You know, you are you prejudging person based on their group. That was anathema during the civil rights movement when people were prejudging blacks based on their skin color. But this is at the heart of what's going on now with social justice, which leads to a very unusual alignment that you have found yourself in lately. And I want to talk about that. You mentioned earlier that when you were running into a lot of difficulty just in your own classroom environment, that you had two atheists of all people that came to your defense, is the way you put it. And now you have made common cause with a very significant atheist who I talk about a lot because I've just recently written a piece dealing with the challenge that he provides. His name is Peter Boghossian. He's from Portland State University, and he wrote a tactics book for atheists. And that book is called, I'm looking at my counter or my bookshelf here now, A Manual for Creating Atheists. And it's so effective, frankly, that we've written some things and published some things to help Christians deal with the atheists who are trained by Peter Boghossian, who, ironically, is a buddy of yours, and you have turned out to make common cause together on university campuses with regards to things like critical theory. So how'd you get in bed with this guy?
Well, I started reading his material to begin with. In chapter 8 of that book on faith in the academy, you would think that he was a Ratio Christi staff person. He says, employing universities in the struggle against faith is a cornerstone in the larger strategy to combat faith, promote reason and rationality, and create skeptics. Many university graduates will become the next generation of leaders and policymakers, and we need to train educators not just to teach students how to think critically, but also how to nudge attitudes about faith on their downward spiral. Well, I heard about what happened to him and that he was mapping on to some of the same dangers that I'm
so,
mapping.
So let me just interrupt for a second.
Yes.
So what you said was basically he has the same strategic concern
mission
as you have.
Yes.
He understands the strategic role of the university
That's
and the
right.
professors, okay? But, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, he thinks faith is a virus. I think it's a virtue. One thing led to another, and one of our staff persons was in contact with him, and I put up an olive branch to meet because he's been going through some difficult times. I tried to give him some advice and befriend him and find common cause and an alliance, frankly, because here's what he did. He put out these articles in grievance studies in various different academic journals that are peer-reviewed journals, and he and two other atheist colleagues, they made all this stuff up. I mean, they rewrote Hitler's Mein Kampf. They talked about sexuality in dog parks in Portland, Oregon. They got awards for these things. they put out about 21 articles, and they got 7 to 10 of them published, accepted in journal articles in 1 year. And then someone found out and they blew the whistle that they were making all this stuff up. Well, as long as they overlaid their ideas with critical theoretical, social justice, identity politics, language, the journal editors, the gatekeepers of the journals loved it until they found out that none of it was real.
Yeah.
Well, now he's on charges against ethics and the university is, you know, giving him double quarantine. Mm-hmm. And so I talked with him. We decided to have me come up. He invited me to lecture in his atheist seminar, 300 level class in Portland, Oregon, Portland State University, to give reasons for God's existence and talk about the rationality of religious belief, where we, you know, went back and forth on the notion faith is a virtue. No, it's a virus. And why we think that. And then we did Q&A with the students. And then I spent about 2 hours with him over lunch discussing what he calls the great new realignment. He feels like he's done with the whole atheism-theism debate because there's a bigger danger on campus and threatening Western civilization itself, not just free speech, but cognitive freedom itself. If you think the wrong things, you're in real trouble. And he says, if I go, you go. If you go, I go. And he said to me, you know, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Michael Shermer, and I, we have lost the war within atheism. That camp has been taken over by a new woke group, and we're on the outs. And if you notice, a lot of the neo-atheists, They don the doors typically of science departments, scientific naturalism, not the postmodern relativism or the emergence of critical theory, social justice, identity politics.
Yeah, you used the word woke just a moment ago, and it means that the people who have woken up to the reality of this binary world between victim and victimizer. And and it, the irony here is that this way of looking at things is an assault not just on the ancient thinkers like Christians, but also the Enlightenment thinkers like the atheists, because in a certain sense, we share a common ground. We believe reality is a certain way, and we're trying to figure out and argue for the truth of the reality as it is. So we share a certain epistemology, though we come to different conclusions. That epistemology, that way of knowing what is true, is under vigorous attack in the university. And this is why somebody like Peter Boghossian, the atheist anti-Christian, is willing to make common cause with someone like Corey Miller, president and CEO of Ratio Christi, because the grounds of conversation and the grounds of thinking and coming to an understanding of what the nature of the world is really like, the grounds of finding truth, is all being completely undermined by critical theory. Corey, I know you got lots more to say about this, and we got like 60 seconds to go. So I just want to thank you for coming on board, and thank you that you have this relationship with Peter Boghossian. It's amazing to me. Just amazing. It reminds me, well, it's just there's a couple of other things that are happening that are similar to this. Who is it? Doug Wilson and Chris Hitchens did a traveling thing together, you know, and even though they are on opposite sides of the faith, religion, God question, they still had a lot in common. And they're very different from the way the culture is going now. Keep on fighting the good fight there with Ratio Christi. Keep up the good work, brother, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Thanks, Greg. It's been a privilege. God
Thank
bless you
so much. That is Corey Miller, PhD in philosophy and theology from University of Aberdeen and currently president and CEO of Ratio Christi. That is R-A-T-I-O-C-H-R-I-S-T-R C-H-R-I-S-T-I.org. If you want more information about that and possibility of working together with that fine organization on some campus around the country or maybe another part of the world. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. You give them heaven this week. Bye-bye now.